Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Welcome to the Freedom Report. First, a message from our sponsors. The Libertarian Republic is brought to you in part by Amagi Metals. Amagi Metals is TLR's trusted metals dealer, and their mission is to help simplify the buying process of metals while illuminating the importance of financial responsibility and sound money. So, if you've been thinking about getting into metals, go to amagimetals.com and check them out. That's amagimetals.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Friday, April the 18th, and I am your host, Austin Peterson, here with my co-host, Ian Hewitt.
Good morning, Austin.
Good morning, Ian. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Yeah, glad you're feeling better. So today we're going to be talking about a story that has really just shaken the whole political world. Every side of the spectrum has taken a side in this battle. The story of Cliven Bundy out in Nevada. And most recently, I think there was the development of the fact that Senator Rand Paul sort of spoke out against the tactics of the federal government. And people said that that means that he's supporting Cliven Bundy. But I don't know if there really is a total black and white issue. Some people are saying they totally support Cliven Bundy on this issue. Other people are saying they're totally against him, obviously. And
on the right, I think there's a spectrum.
There is a spectrum, especially because we saw that Glenn Beck came out against many of the people who were advocating for violence in the standoff with the feds.
Right.
But what's really sparked our interest this morning is the DT words that Harry Reid, Senator Harry Reid from Nevada, has said. I want to read to you real quick. This is from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. United States Senator Harry Reid on Thursday called supporters of Bunkerville rancher Cliven Bundy, quote, domestic terrorists, because they defended him against a Bureau of Land Management cattle roundup with guns and put their children in harm's way. He said, these people who hold themselves out to be patriots are not. They're nothing more than domestic terrorists, Reid said. Now, the BLM shut down its week-long roundup of Bundy's cattle after an armed confrontation with dozens of militia members who had traveled to southern Nevada from across the country and from neighboring states. And the problem is that Bundy has not paid federal grazing fees for 20 years and owes about $1 million to the federal government. What's your take on this, Ian?
This is a really interesting distinction because we've been seeing for a couple years that the left will label people on the right and people critical of the federal government as potential domestic terrorists. Mm-hmm. And as if that was not outrageous enough in and of itself, now we have Harry Reid saying, quote unquote, what happened here was domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. So we're to the point now where peaceful noncompliance, if it represents a certain opinion with which someone like Harry Reid disagrees, is domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. Simply disagreeing with the federal government makes you not just a potential domestic terrorist, but a domestic terrorist. Mm-hmm.
Now, a really thorough and in-depth investigation into this case, I think, challenges everyone to ask themselves, what do they really believe? And what really is your ideological backing? Because the question here is because Cliven Bundy does not recognize the government of the United States. Now, admittedly, his family has owned that estate since the late 1880s, I believe, so the timing is such that I'm not sure what year did Nevada enter the Union. It wasn't until the early 1900s,
well,
was it?
Well, the key point is that he's been on it for a long time.
His family has.
And his family settled it under the assumption that they would be allowed to graze there,
right,
and utilize the land.
But they have to pay the fees.
Starting just 20 years ago, mm-hmm, the federal government began to fine them. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's a lot like if I sell you a product and then after we've made the transaction, I change the terms and change the product that I'm selling you. That's stealing from you.
That is, but I'm not sure if that's the case here. And I mean, here's the problem. The problem is that the federal government owns way too much land in the state of Nevada, I believe.
Right, that's another big problem.
The number is, I think it's staggering. I think it's like 85% of the land of Nevada is owned by the federal government, which is just a totally destructive to private property.
I mean,
rights.
There's the deeper question of, can the federal government really even have a legitimate claim to this much land from coast to coast?
Well, they don't do it in states like Texas. I mean, like, they have a tiny amount. I mean, Texas doesn't allow that.
But then on a more technical level, I think it is also clear that his family is kind of getting gypped here.
Okay, yes, most likely. But the problem is that you have to ask yourself deep down, ideologically, what it is you believe in. Now, here's the issue. Now, a lot of, like, states' rights conservatives have taken up this cause as a sign of sovereignty of Nevada over the federal government. But I wonder if those conservatives would ask themselves, do I believe in the Constitution? Most likely they would say, yes, I believe in the Constitution. And the Constitution of Nevada actually does cede this land to the federal government, because this is Nevada's 1864 Constitution. Let me read this to you. The people inhabiting said territory do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within said territory, and that same shall be and remain at the sole and entire disposition of the United States. That's the Nevada State Constitution. So the Constitution of Nevada does very clearly state that this land is ceded to the federal government. So ask yourself, if you call yourself a constitutional conservative and you say you believe in states' rights, well, this state of Nevada has chosen to cede this public land. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm saying that you have to question yourself if that's what you believe in, of whether or not you really believe in that state sovereignty, because it's giving it up.
Right. Well, on the one hand, even given that, it's still illegitimate to change the terms of a contract after you've made a contract. Unilaterally. It's illegitimate to unilaterally change the terms of a contract that someone else has signed with you. You can't do that. That's stealing.
Well, but this is a court decision, right? Isn't it?
Yes, the courts should be involved. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, I think that essentially the Constitution is a very good guide for a pretty free and just society. We would be, you know, 90% better if we adhered to the Constitution. We would have a much better country. Mm-hmm. Life would be much better. Mm-hmm. But the Constitution was written by men. I don't think it's some sort of divine document. Mm-hmm. So it's useful insofar as it brings us to a freer and a more just society. And I think it has the potential to do that, and that's why we should point out that the government is doing a lot of unconstitutional things. But I don't think that, if hypothetically the Constitution could be used to justify some injustice, that doesn't override the natural immorality of a certain act.
Okay, sure. Now, listen, I want to get into the issue. I want to get back on the news, because Glenn Beck said to Bundy Ranch supporters yesterday, he says, go on Facebook and, quote, unfriend me. Let me read to you from Glenn Beck's statement. Glenn Beck has a message for anyone who is, quote, crying for revolution, insurrection, and a call to arms. He wants nothing to do with you. This morning I got up and I saw some more news reports and more people in America that are standing up now and crying for revolution, insurrection, arming yourself, and a call to arms, Beck said. I will tell you, I believe in the Second Amendment, and I will defend myself. I believe in the rights that we have, but I will tell you more than I believe in my rights. I believe in the responsibilities that we have to God, and God does not call anyone to anger. God does not call anyone to vengeance, ever, ever, ever. Now, before you, I can see you shaking your head, Ian, and I know you want to jump in here, but I have to, yeah. I have to ask myself when I listen to this. You know, how can you say that you believe in the Second Amendment and you will defend yourself and not defend this rancher? I mean, obviously there's wrong on both sides, but to me it seems like the government bears much more responsibility for the problems in this, even though there were some problems with protesters saying they put women on the front lines, which we will discuss here in a moment. But I want to talk to you about what Glenn Beck said, because he says, I believe in the responsibility. He says more than he believes in his rights, I believe in the responsibilities that we have to God. Now, as a secular libertarian, Ian, that scares me, because it says to me that there are a group of people in this free market, quote-unquote, movement, the freedom movement, who would cede their rights to their creator. And I fear that they would cede my rights to their idea of a creator. What do you say to that?
Well, I don't think you cede your rights to a creator. You derive your rights from a creator. Right. And we have to place primacy in the creator. That's precisely why government can't just bulldoze over our rights, because it doesn't occupy the place that God rightfully does.
And he says, more than I believe in my rights.
I was really irritated by his... First of all, let's talk about the violence thing. Insofar as Glenn Beck is talking about violence here, you know, thank God that none of these protesters started shooting federal agents. That just would have been horrible. I think that things have worked out pretty well here so
right.
far. By being peaceful and defensive, I think these protesters got a lot done and set a good example.
They bared their quills.
Right.
You know?
As far as this particular instance, I think that Glenn Beck is right. But Glenn Beck also sounds like he's categorically opposed to ever resisting any tyrannical government. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't think that it'll ever be appropriate. You know, what if, Glenn Beck, what if you're, you know, when your grandkids are your age, mm-hmm. the government is imprisoning people for right. holding dissenting opinions or something. At that point,
right.
is it still unacceptable to resist a tyrannical government? I mean, what about the American Revolution? He must think that that was illegitimate if it's categorically wrong to resist a government. And he says that God never calls us to anger. I mean, that just makes no sense. Has Glenn Beck read the Gospels, I wonder? Christ fashioned a whip. He drove money changers out of the temple. He overturned their tables. His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me."
Yes.
He called the Pharisees, you know, vipers and serpents.
Okay, so Glenn Beck obviously has some problems.
That's called righteous indignation, and it's very biblical. I really don't know what Glenn Beck is talking
about.
Okay,
well, you know what? Here's the thing, and I like to play devil's advocate sometimes, mm-hmm. so I'm going to try and put myself in Glenn Beck's shoes and see where he's coming from before I talk about a secular case of armed self-defense that occurred in American history, which I think a lot of people don't know about. It's a fascinating story. But I just want to say that I think what Glenn Beck might be reacting to are some of the real nuts, the real psychopaths, the people who want to instigate a battle with the federal government. These are people who they want to fire first. You know what I mean? These are people who are going on the offense against the feds. These are not people who see themselves being transgressed upon, being tread upon, and then firing back. These are like the Confederates in the Civil War firing first on Fort Sumter. These are the hotheads. Mm-hmm. These are the people who are looking to stoke a real revolution and I would say insurrection, because these people had no chance of revolution. This isn't like Judge Napolitano or our thought leaders of the libertarian movement getting a rifle and going out in the front lines and leading a rebellion like George Washington or something. Mm-hmm. These are a bunch of dirty rednecks out there, you know, hoping that there's going to be some blood and that they're more than willing to start it. So playing devil's advocate here, you can see that Glenn Beck is probably reacting to some of the actual fringe lunatics who want to initiate battle. But his philosophical foundations, as you said, about the right to self-defense are incorrect. You know, he says, I believe in Gandhi. You know, I'm like a Martin Luther King. Well, I give Martin Luther King a lot of credit, and I certainly think that there are times when you should emulate Martin Luther King or you should emulate Gandhi. But Gandhi was also wrong about certain things. There is a time when you must use a gun to defend yourself. Mm-hmm. And the perfect example of this is a story that I want to tell you. It was called the Battle of Athens in 1946. It's a fantastic story about World War II veterans who, when they came back, they realized that their town had gone corrupt, and there was a local sheriff who was colluding with an elected state representative to corrupt their elections. Well, so what happened was all these World War II veterans, they got their guns, they rode on the sheriff's office because the guy had stolen the ballots. They were gonna cheat the election, and these guys were basically passing political favors back and forth to each other to like switch Senate seats, I believe it's a congressional seat, so these guys could basically stay in power. This was called the McMinn County War, Battle of Athens, 1946. You guys need to check this out. There's actually a movie that was made about it, and there were dozens of men, lots of rifles, and you know, 100 against 100 deputies, and they had Thompson submachine guns, and they fought for their rights. And they actually won after a shooting battle that occurred in 1946. But as you've laid out the case here, Ian, you know, you said that philosophically his underpinnings of what he said in terms of theology, Christian theology, is incorrect.
Right.
But here's the thing. So Reed says that some of these people are domestic terrorists. He's obviously painting with a broad brush. But, you know, maybe 5 to 10% of these people are crazy lunatics.
But Reed didn't say that. Reed said, right, broadly, the supporters are, right, domestic terrorists. And he said what happened here was domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. Now, if Glenn Beck had been criticizing those few people who want to incite violence, mm-hmm, that would have been well and good, but that's not what he said. I think he erroneously invoked Christ, mm-hmm, and I think he needs to maybe revisit John and revisit Matthew. And I also think it's wrong to categorically oppose resisting injustice. I mean, look at Harry Reid's comments. Mm-hmm. Harry Reid clearly believes, he accepts sort of the Rousseauian principle that the general will cannot err. And he thinks the government represents that general will and it's morally perfect and can't be questioned.
Explain that, you know, for our audience.
Well, you know, Rousseau is really a fundamental...
A philosopher.
Foundational philosopher on the left, inspired the Jacobins, who inspired Marx and, mm-hmm, so on. And Rousseau thought that, essentially, he believed in moral democracy. He, mm-hmm, thought that if the
might
majority,
right,
supported something, right, then it must be moral. Harry Reid really believes that, and because he thinks the government represents that general will, he really does see the government, I think, the way believers see God. He thinks that, you know, that government can replace God as a moral arbiter. Mm-hmm. And so if you disagree with it and if you don't comply, then you are a domestic terrorist. Mm-hmm. You are morally evil. Mm-hmm. When we're confronted with people like that, I do think we really have to be concerned about the future of the country, mm-hmm, and, you know, what sort of things might be forced upon our descendants.
Well, I think that the movement here should really be a reminiscent of the Sagebrush Rebellion, which, if a lot of you aren't familiar, there was a big battle over the federal land use policy, which flared up in the 1970s. And Ronald Reagan hopped in on the side of the rebels on this one. And basically what it was a bunch of legislative proposals that would have removed the federal government's ownership of the lands. It would have basically demanded that the federal government begin to liquidate their holdings of federal lands in these states. And I just don't understand why the federal government needs to own all of that land. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, maybe you can make an argument for public parks or certain things like Yellowstone, where they're trying to hold natural resources up for common public use. Again, we can have a debate about that. But I think that the issue here is that the federal government owns all of this land. Now, again, I want to play devil's advocate on something again for a moment, because I think that there is an issue when it comes to some of the behavior. And this is maybe that 10% that Glenn Beck was discussing. Obviously, we do have a right to armed rebellion. Obviously, I loved the fact that these people stood up for their rights and rallied against Cliven Bundy against the federal government. But one of the things that concerned me was a news story that came out, which was that Sheriff Richard Mack, who is very much a constitutional conservative kind of a guy, somebody that a lot of libertarians look to and support, said that they put women and children on the front lines. Now, a lot of people said, well, this is propaganda. How could you repeat this? Blah, blah, blah. Well, these were his words. Mm-hmm. Sheriff Richard Mack said that I had my wife and child out on the front line in front of us so that if the feds shot first, they would have shot women and children and the public relations would have been a nightmare. What kind of a man puts his wife and his child in front of him and on a battle like this? Let me tell you something. If I had a fight and I knew that it was a fight that I had to fight, the reason why I would be fighting is because of my wife and my children.
Right.
They would be safely behind me.
Precisely.
So I would make sure as a man of honor that I was fighting to protect their lives, not to use them as some sort of public relations. You know what I mean? That's what libertarians accuse governments of doing, of putting, you know, women and children in front of the line. That's like the kind of stuff that Hitler did, you know, to use this kind of false flag attack where it's like, oh, they shoot, look at this terrible public relations. They shot our wives and our child. Oh, you know what I mean?
Right.
That to me is absolutely dishonorable.
And you and I don't think that the sheriff is Hitler, obviously.
No.
But
that's the kind of tactics that dictators use.
It was very silly that when we posted about this on the website, lots of people got upset with us and assumed we were criticizing Bundy's supporters.
No.
Or opposing them categorically.
Right.
This was just a fact.
Right.
He actually said this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we can have a tactical debate about whether that sort of thing is appropriate.
I find that dishonorable.
I agree with you. Right. But it's just a fact that this is what he said. He said that he did this. So just pointing that out isn't necessarily spreading pro-government propaganda.
Right. But exactly. And here's the thing. They said the number one reaction was that the women chose to be there. Perfectly fine. Perfectly,
mm-hmm,
fine. But But what the specific statement was that they placed them there, that the men put them there so that they would be in harm's way. And to me, I find that to be totally dishonorable. Not because I'm a sexist or a misogynist, but because I don't like the idea of using women and children as political props. And I think that because I think that's what dictators do. They try and say, oh, think of the children and all that. And if Cliven Bundy's supporters wanted to remain honorable men, they should remain honorable men by acting honorably.
I think we should say something to those few people that, you know, you've suggested Glenn Beck was speaking about, mm-hmm. who would like to incite violence. Mm-hmm. I think if someone holds that position, just look at how this has turned out favorably so far. Mm-hmm. They've set a great example by causing the federal government to back off. Mm-hmm. And that's happened because they were nonviolent and because they were peaceful. This story so far has been a testament to the power of defensive and nonviolent resistance.
Right, and you have to, you don't enable Harry Reid.
Right,
by being a domestic terrorist.
Don't set up a nice caricature for him.
Exactly, yeah. Thank you. So I think that the issue here really is, it all hinges on the fact that the federal government owns too much land. Mm-hmm. It's too big, it needs to get the hell out of Nevada, and many of the other western states. I think Nevada isn't the only one that's got like 80% of the land owned by the federal government. I think we need another sagebrush rebellion. Maybe this whole hullabaloo is going to teach us all a lesson, and it's going to shine a light on the real problem, which is the feds need to sell off this land, and they need to turn it over to the states, and the states need to start selling this off to private property owners.
And I think states, and then of course local governments, need to start asserting more power to manage their own internal affairs.
Absolutely.
We can move towards a more constitutional and a freer society that way.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for listening to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Very interesting topic. What do you guys think about this? Send us an email, send us a topic, tell us what you think about the show, and if you like us, subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, and do me a favor, if you really like us, then send us your email. This month, if you send us your email, you'll be entered to win a replica of George Washington's flintlock pistol. It's pretty cool. Our first president's flintlock pistol, beautiful replica of his gun. And if you send us your email, you'll be entered to win. What that email address will do is give you our insider newsletter. You get some cool stories and things that a lot of people who go to the website won't see. So don't forget to sign up, send us your email, and don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.